I'm Mary Summers, and 6 months of the year I live in Tucson, Arizona, where I volunteer with a group called No More Deaths, and I attend the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tucson, which is the fiscal agent of No More Deaths, and has as its official ministry No More Deaths as their social action, which the entire congregation voted on, and it was unanimous. We have been going to Tucson now for 3 winters. This will be our fourth when we return in October. We went there on vacation and decided to stay longer and actually purchase a place. And now we've been going for 6 months. And after I was there for 2 days, I think the first time, I went to the UU Church where they invited me to a No More Deaths meeting. And No More Deaths is a group of people that is based on faith principles that was started about 2004 when they were finding many people's bodies not too far from the city of Tucson. Tucson is 75 miles from the Mexican border. And I'm going to give you just a short history so you understand why we're having all these deaths in the Tucson area. And the group No More Deaths' main function is to stop these deaths. I have actually brought a picture, which is from 1999 to 2009, and the red dots, I'll pass this around, is showing where people have died outside the city of Tucson, and on many of these dots signify more than one death because of the area. So you can
take a point to Tucson and the map there. So
yeah.
Better oriented.
I'm going to also pass it around, but here's Tucson. And here's the border, and the red dots are the deaths. And it also shows where the water stations are, because the first thing that they realized is that, you know, people are dying of dehydration. And their first service was leaving jugs of water in the desert, so when people were crossing, they could find them. I think for the importance of what's happening today, we only have to go back about 30 years when it was the time of Ronald Reagan, and he had a line that he drew, an imaginary line that said, we will not have any communism coming closer through Central America to the United States. And we supported, as a country, dictators who were going in and wiping out communism. I'm also a member of the Madison Area Sister City El Salvador group that started one of the first sister cities in Arquitao, El Salvador. And many of the people, many of the churches at that time formed the sanctuary movement, of which I know Perry was active in, which said to people who were coming into the United States, you can stay at our churches and you will be safe. And many of the ministers that were involved in the sanctuary movement are the same people who started No More Deaths. So this is a group of a lot of really young people, but also people who are, you know, even older than I am in it, because these are the people who were very active over 30 years ago. So Ronald Reagan was pretty much shamed at some point for what was going on and the people who were dying and fleeing these countries. And he gave a very broad amnesty to the people who were living in the country to become citizens. And that's the last time we've actually had that, although up until that point, almost every decade, at some point we would give people who had come to the country without proper citizenship, we would make them citizens. But we haven't done that since then. And he also liberalized the immigration laws, making a lot of things easier. to become a citizen. And then what happened is, in the 90s, Bill Clinton, during the Bill Clinton era, we had, you know, just a flood because of our economic boom, everyone wanting to come here and work. We had a flood of people coming in California said, hey, we've had enough. Texas said, we've had enough. There was a Republican Congress, and we passed a very tough immigration law that we still living with today. Things that they put in case you ever need it, you know, which was implemented after 9/11. And also started building walls. They built a wall from across California. They built a wall in the Texas area. But they left the wall open for about almost 200 miles in the Tucson area.
No wall.
No wall. No wall. And there's some wall in the Tucson. There's like 200 miles of border. I think there's over 180 miles at least without any wall. And Doris Meisner, who was over immigration at the time, told a congressional hearing that the people would try to cross through that area, and then they would die, and they would stop coming. It would trickle down. Because the area is filled with cannons and mountains and cactus and very thick brush that it didn't look like anyone would be able to cross. Now, before things got a little harder to come into the United States, people from other countries were coming here and working, and corporations, of course, wanted that. They had cheap labor. And they would work, and they would go back home and visit their families, and they would be able to freely cross back and forth. It wasn't really a problem. But now it was getting more difficult. So they realized that if they wanted to be able to support their families, and they had good jobs here in the United States, that the people who, their families would have to come. So not
who
only
was the they?
The migrants who were working in the United States, instead of being able to go back home into their communities and visit, and then come back and work on a very free basis, they decided, well, of course, they had to stay because they couldn't get back. So one of the things I think the government wasn't planning on was now you are going to be having women and children trying to cross through the border to get to the men that were here working. And we were starting to also find a lot of children and a lot of women who were dead in the, right outside the city of Tucson. And so the other thing that happened is a lot of people who had come in 30 years ago during that sanctuary movement time, they came as children. And so you had people who had been here through those years, 10, 20, 30 years, and we had a strong move to start deporting them. So when you're hearing about all the people who are deported, and about 80 people are deported daily, these are people who have lived here a long time, many of them. The Obama administration in the very first year deported 400,000 people. I think he deported 400,000 people the next couple of years too. This year it has slowed down. And I don't know if he wasn't understanding or if the people weren't listening to him. I've been very, very surprised to see these huge deportations under his administration. I heard him speaking this week at a college university, and it was the first time I thought, well, I guess he's understanding. He said, we have children that have lived here all their lives, and we're deporting them into countries that they don't that they don't know anything about. Because this isn't just happening in Tucson. After I spoke a few weeks ago, a member of Perry gave me something to read that showed that, well, there's a lot of more Hispanic people in some other states than there actually are in Tucson. Hispanic. Well, that's true, but that has nothing to do with the issue, because you could be living in Chicago almost all your life and driving down the street, and you're going to end up in the Nogales area outside Tucson. That's where they're deporting you, in a country that you know very little about. So I want to tell you about some of the people I have met, because what as I started getting active in the Tucson area, while we were living there, I decided that I heard they needed nurses, I would go down and see what I could do over in Mexico, where there have been where the deportations are happening. Nomar Des has two main areas they work in. One is in the desert, where they're putting out water, lots of water, and the other one is in Nogales, which had just started a few years ago, where they're helping all the people who are deported, because what the government does is drop people off on this side of the border and watch them walk over, and that's the help they get. And they would drop, and they go mainly to this truck stop area, so there was no services or basically not anything. The first thing that Nomar Des did was just put up a tent and at least have coffee and try to talk to people and help them a little bit. So I knew I couldn't work in the desert. I couldn't even drive out there, much less walk and carry water and put it out. So I knew that the work I wanted to do to help would be to go to Nogales. And I thought, I started going to meetings, the Nomar Des meetings that met every week. And I knew a man who was going down there, and I asked him if I could come with him. And he said, oh yes, that would be great. His wife was a nurse, but she wasn't able to go that week. And they didn't have a nurse going. So I went along with them, and I don't know what I was expecting when I got to Mexico, but it isn't what I found. We picked someone up who was going to be bringing over someone's backpack. And one of the services that Nomar Des does is collect backpacks from the detention areas where people are held. And they try to reunite the backpack with the people who have been deported, or with the families. They pick them up from the prisons, they pick them up in Tucson, where people are being held and processed. And we had one of these backpacks, and there was arrangements made, or a message that they would be meeting us at the border. So we crossed over the border, and this is the first one of the very first people we saw was someone who met us to get his backpack, and we looked through it, saw that his passport was in it. It was a Mexican passport. And it was, he saw he had his money, he was very happy. And then he looked at me, and I was wearing a WORT radio station t-shirt that day. And he looked at my t-shirt and he said, oh, are you from Madison? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, I love that radio station. And then he told me how he lived in Madison for 8 years. And that, I don't know how long he had been in the country, but his mother was sick, so he went home to see her. And he couldn't get back. He tried crossing over twice, and he was picked up both times. And how mainly people do cross, because it's so difficult, they hire someone who's a coyote. I don't know if he did that or not, but they call them coyotes. They used to bring drugs, and now they're finding, well, there's really more money in bringing people over. So they get a big group of people, and the people try to cross over with them, and they move very fast at night. And if you can't keep up, you're just left behind. So he was picked up twice, and he said to me, after we talked for a while, that he had a fiance in Baraboo. He said she wanted to get married. He didn't think that was fair to her, so he didn't get married. And today, being married to a U.S. citizen is not a guarantee that you will not be deported. You'll be deported all the time. And he asked me, he said, my cell phone has died. I haven't had any way to charge it. Would I please call her and let her know that he's tried twice, he's afraid to try again, and he'll be in prison for a long time, and that he would not be coming back. And so I told him, he gave me her phone number, I went home and called her, and it was a very, of course, sad conversation. I let her know that he was all right, but he was going to be going to Tijuana and trying to find his sister. Another thing that No More Deaths does that is very popular with the people who have been deported is we supply them with a phone. We dial the number so we make sure that it's dialed correctly and it's well controlled. But we let them call their families and let them know, because some people haven't had a chance to, they've disappeared off the face of the earth, and often they haven't been able to let their families even know where they are. So one of the things that I did this year when I went to Tucson was volunteer work for the ACLU, who had asked No More Deaths if anybody would do any kind of documentation. They had received grant money to set up a pilot program, and we weren't really actually doing the program, we were going to test it. But would we go over and interview people that seemed to be having problems when they were detained, because they can be really roughed up and treated not very nicely. So I volunteered to help with that. And it also wasn't very hard for me to find people to interview. I do understand Spanish, but when someone tells me a story that's very involved about what happened to them, I really need a translator. So I brought a translator with me, and someone from the UU Church that used to live in Mexico. He always accompanies me when I ask him. And I'm over, when you cross the border now, because there's more services for people, because this is such a huge problem, there's a place where you can go eat for a week. You have a morning meal and an evening meal. So I was supposed to meet volunteers from No More Deaths where they were having breakfast. And she was going to take me to where they were working and doing the phones, which is about a mile away. And I know the area. I could have gone there myself. But just for safety reasons, we like to walk in pairs, and they wanted to meet me there. So I'm standing outside waiting for her, and she knows I'm going to be there to do documentation, and we have this form. I have to kind of chuckle when the speaker today at church talked about yes and no answers, because you should try to do these with yes and no answers, and the questions are pretty much like that, because they've set it up so they can get information quickly. Well, maybe you're treating someone, giving them medical care, and you could also say, oh, and would you just answer these questions? But that's not how it goes, believe me, because they start telling you a whole bunch of things that are on the form, and it doesn't take just a few minutes. It used to take me a very long time. But I'm standing outside talking to a nurse with another volunteer organization, and someone hears me speaking English, which is usually what happens to me. How I attract people over there, I think, who speak English. And he comes up and starts talking to me, and I realize in a very short period of time this could be a good candidate for my study that I'm supposed to be doing. And he has put on here that I can use that we can use this. I mean, he'd love to anybody to hear his story. He signed something that can be used publicly, so I'm not telling anyone's private information. He came over to the United States when he was 3 months old. His mother just walked over the border with him, and she never thought anything about it, because he had saw disaster. Why didn't you come over before you had me? And she said it wasn't a problem. And most of his life, he's 27 now, but most of his life he did not even know he wasn't legal in the United States. He thought that he was an American citizen. But in fact, they got on his record that he lied, because at one point you could go back and forth across the border and they'd say, are you a U.S. citizen? And you say yes. when he was going back and forth to visit his family. He didn't know that he wasn't. So it's on his record that he lied to the authorities, but he said he really didn't know that. Well, he did find out, you know. But now he's married, he had his own business, and he had a house, he had a U.S. wife, and he has a 5-year-old daughter. And he was home one night, and he looked out his front window and saw someone in the driveway trying to steal his car. And he called the police, and they came and realized that he wasn't a citizen. They would not let him pass. They immediately took him and deported him. They would not let him call a lawyer. If he had gotten a lawyer, he would now have qualified under Obama's executive order that is saying stop deporting people who came here as a child and have done no wrong. But I don't know how he will ever be able to come back. He's trying. But once you're deported, it's very, very difficult. I talked to an attorney in Tucson, and they told me that in like 9 years, she's helped, or 20 years, she's helped like 9 people or something. That she's working really hard for people who are in the country. Once you're out of the country, she doesn't want to hear this case. So he kept asking for an attorney. They said, no, the office is closed. And he was just quickly deported and dropped off in the Nogales. He cannot even speak the same kind of Spanish that's spoken in the Nogales. He has no job there. He wasn't living on the streets. His friends bring him over clothing. And now he has a wife and child that's a U.S. citizen, so he's in a way lucky because they can come over the border and see him. But if you're deported and you have no papers, and the people that you live with, like your wife doesn't also, I mean, you just don't see this person again unless you try to cross over. And many of the people who don't have papers today at one time did have papers. They had some kind of a visa or a green card or something at some point. But when 9/11 happened, they would go to get it renewed and they'd be deported right out of the office. So they stopped going. So, how far, we say, well, how could someone walk through there when it's so dangerous? Well, how far would you walk if this is where your wife and your children and your family and everybody you know is, and you're now in the country, and the border is very militarized. They've taken Nogales, and that is just what used to be a lovely little town, a horrible place, to try to think, okay, now I think I'll live here and get a job. It's just not the kind of place you want to live. I mean, I thought about what would I do? Well, you should go farther into Mexico, into some of these cities, but you're not going to have access to your 5-year-old if you do that. So it's a real dilemma on how these families are being torn apart. Another person, I then finally got my way to where I was supposed to be, these gals that I was supposed to go with and to go without me, because one of the other things that the people try to tell you about that's certainly not on this form is how well their children are doing in school. Because in Mexico and many of the Central American countries, they don't have high schools like we do, public high schools. They have public schools for the lower grades, but they don't have them for the after you get to be like junior high and high school, certainly not high school. I know one of the main things we do in El Salvador is give scholarships for people to be able to go to high school. The people who have money are able to do that. So if they have their children who are U.S. citizens, they're in school and they're doing well, they're not going to take these children and go live in these communities that are not doing well, and their kids will not be able to relate to the other children, and they won't be able to go to school and get an education and get an opportunity. They will leave them with friends and family, and even if they're both deported. I mean, Tucson people have on their refrigerators signs for the social workers what to do with their children if they are deported and taken out. So this is another man who does not want to be identified by who he is because his wife is unable, and he has, I believe, a seven-year-old. He's got older children who are in high school, but he's also got a seven-year-old. And he hadn't seen his mother for 22 years, and he decided to go home. He was afraid she was going to die, and he wouldn't have seen her. So he went home. He's 53. He cannot get back. He could not get back. He didn't get very far. He was a diabetic. And they took his medicine and threw it away. And they put him in a holding area with 180 people. He's only that he saw on the door, it said 48. And so for 3 nights, people stood on his feet. During the day when they take 80 people out to process them, it would be a little bit more breathing room. But he was in a very hot room with no air conditioning, people standing on his feet. So he was at the medical area, and he needed his feet taken care of. He was able to then go buy some medicine. They don't believe, they throw all your medicine away because they just don't believe it. And they don't want to trust whatever is in it. And also, they take, when the speaker today talked about picking yourself up by your boots, they all frequently, I mean, they take your shoelaces away, they take them and also take away your shoes. So, one of the main things as a nurse that I do when I'm here is take care of people's feet. And my last 22 years was not doing nursing care, but I'm able to do the kind of care that I need to do when I'm there. I always know how to listen to people's hearts, and with a stethoscope, I carry my own supplies, and I treat people who have not had anyone be kind to them in a very long time. They don't care that my Spanish isn't perfect and that I don't have the latest technology in medical care. So I'm very comfortable with what I'm doing. I didn't know if I would be because, as I say, my Spanish is not perfect and my nursing skills were really rusty. But this has been some of the most rewarding work that I've ever done. The first time I went over, we were just basically giving medical care practically on the street. We'd go to the bus stop and people would find out right away that your nurse people would come, and you'd just be sitting at an outside bus stop giving medical care. Or we would go to where people would go when they wanted, it's like our customs area, where they wanted to go for help when they were in a country that they needed to get established somehow. There's a place in Mexico. They let us have a little tiny room. And then we found a little building across the street that didn't have any water or any lights, and we worked out of there for a while. I mean, it's like I'm right here in Tucson, living in a nice townhouse, but, you know, 75 miles away, I'm working with, like, refugees. And Robert Rodriguez, who used to work at WORT, now lives in Tucson, and he writes a column, and he quoted someone that said, someday we're not going to ask ourselves, we're not going to ask people, what side were you on? We're going to ask them, well, what did you do about this? My husband, Andrew, has been ordering a lot of movies lately on World War II. I think he saw one, and then they say, oh, you love all these movies. So all of a sudden, I'm watching one movie about what happened in Germany after another. And it just strikes me so much of what is happening here in our country. This is our border that's militarized, and we are treating people we are treating people almost like we were treated, the Jewish people were treated, when they were thrown onto the borders of other countries. Now, we don't have concentration camps where people are being murdered, but they're being treated very badly, and they're being displaced, just like they are in Palestine. And I don't think the people in this country really understand that. And the other thing that stood out to me very soon is these are our people. They've lived here, many of them, a long time. They're our neighbors. Our neighbors, our friends, people I've worked with at WORT, they could be just dumped outside the Tucson border. Now, one of the reasons they're putting them outside Tucson is it's a safer area on the border than some of the other areas. So this winter, where we would sometimes have 80 people, we all of a sudden have 250 people for breakfast. Mm-hmm. 250 people who have no idea where they're going to go somewhere. All right, now I'm going to tell you about another person right now.
Mary, is Nogales in Mexico proper or just Arizona?
It's on both sides of the border.
Oh.
So what I Nogales on
the border? It used to be like a city on the border where you went back and forth. Now there's a wall and lots of military, you know, border patrol or customs. And one of the things I would do, because people don't know on this survey who picked him up, I just said, say what color were they wearing? Were they wearing brown? Were they wearing green? Now, Juanita was real easy to get her story because she's just waiting for someone to be able to talk to. And she was driving people to the bus station from the Commodore. It's called El Commodore. She was driving him from there to the bus stop, the bus station. And she heard me talking, and she wanted to tell me her story. I had some people who wanted me to be somewhere else, but this woman, and I was told not to go to the bus station because there was an incident that happened there, and the No More Deaths people weren't going there for a while. But nope, she said, come to the bus station. And I always like going to the bus station. I met some of my more interesting people there and felt most helpful there. Well, she had her story that she gave me written in English and in Spanish. Will someone please listen to her? Because her story is, she lived in Phoenix. She got out of work at 2 a.m. She was heading to her babysitter's house to pick up her two children. One was 4 weeks old and the other was 2 years old. The police asked me if I had, they should have stopped by the police. The police asked me if I had residency papers or a visa, to which I answered no. They then told me they had to arrest me because I did not have a driver's license and I owed $600 in tickets. I asked them to please let me notify my babysitter that I was being arrested because she had my two small children, and they refused, saying I was lying. They took me, and she explains where they took her, and her lawyers told her there was nothing they could do for her because immigration had already put a hold on her. The judge gave me 6 days in jail to pay what I owed. And then immediately after that, they sent me to an Australia jail where a nurse asked me if I was pregnant. I said no, that I just had a baby, and my son was 4 weeks old. And they then asked her, well, where did you have the baby? They're an investigator. Anyway, the bottom line here is they put her 5 days in the hole where she did not even get toilet paper or soap. And she asked, why are you doing this? And they said, because you are Mexican.
You are what?
Mexican.
Oh.
Then they transferred her, saying that if she didn't sign these papers, she would be put in prison for 8 months. And she again told them she left her babies with a babysitter, but they said, if you don't sign, you will remain 8 months in jail. And you hear this a lot. I mean, you're supposed to tell people, don't sign these papers. And if they don't sign them, they have such a much better chance, because these papers say they won't even try to come back for a long time, or they will commit or it'll be a felony. So they scare them into signing these papers. She was then deported into Nogales, where she's gotten this job, and she still doesn't know where her babies are. She has someone working with her priest. The priest translated this for her. And she's staying in the Nogales area because she's trying to contact people, and she can't find social workers. I'm sure social services of some sort are coming, taking the children, but she doesn't know where they are. And these are five women who were traveling together. They didn't know each other, but they were young women all trying to find their husbands. And they were able to travel a couple of days before they were picked up. These people are very interesting to interview because they were trying to get in to eat, and they were trying to get in to get clothes. And they were more concerned, of course, about that than answering the questions. And so you would be interviewing, and the next thing you know, they would switch, and you'd be talking to somebody else. And these young women, I did need a translator with. But the one thing I do remember them saying is, they get a hamburger, and they took the hamburgers and just threw them at them like they were dogs. And these were really young, attractive women who were just trying to find their husbands because their husbands were here in the United States working and they're going back home. Now, I'm going to also send you a pass around a picture of this medical tent, which I helped put up in the desert. I volunteered not only because I wanted to help put up the tent, but I wanted to actually get to the camp. We have a camp called Bird Camp. And Bird Camp was on land by Bird Baylor. She's the one that wrote the children's book that we read a few weeks ago. And she has let No More Deaths use her land. She's like halfway in between Tucson and the border, and in an area where a lot of migrants at this point are really looking for water or looking for some kind of medical care.
It's on the United States side.
It's on the United States side. All the work in the desert is done on the United States side. The Nogales work is done over in Mexico. And one interesting thing about working over in Mexico, one of the things Andrew and I did this winter was collect socks, because we needed them so badly for taking care of feet. So they wanted someone who would coordinate this. And so I said, I would do it. I mean, how hard could it be trying to collect socks? But it was like, I mean, you know, once I get into something, I really can get obsessed with it. I got a list of 107 churches that I decided we should get a box. Andrew would go out every day and get boxes. We put little signs on them with our phone number and our name, and we'd go knock on the church. Andrew would be kind of hobbling up there with his cane or walker, and I'd go and tell him I'm a nurse working on the border, and nobody turned us away. They'd say, oh, come on, sit down. I'd tell them that we needed socks. We collected 5,000 pairs of socks, and they had pretty much gone through them by the time we came home. I was hoping I would collect enough. This was going to last until we returned. But we went around, and of the 107, I would say maybe there were 35 churches that were really helpful. And it was like, as a Unitarian, it was like, I always wanted to take one of those comparative literature or comparative religion classes. And this is what that was like, I'll tell you. Visiting all these churches, the Catholic churches in Tucson were absolutely wonderful. The Presbyterians were great. The UUC churches, I mean, so many of them were just absolutely wonderful. It actually gave me a lot of hope for religion that I didn't have prior to this. There was only one church that I would have preferred not probably visiting because the visualization is still in my mind of what this was like. We were starting to get farther out of the city in some of the really rich areas, and we went into this church. And we drove in, there's this, and of course in Tucson, the other thing that they have are more private schools, more charter schools than anywhere in the United States. All these churches have some school associated with them. Well, this one had a big junior high. And so I'm looking at the setting, and then they had these huge crosses all along the driveways you come in, all over the front of the church, and just crosses, and they have a year on each one. And I thought, oh, maybe they're honoring the migrants that have died. No, no, no. I figured that out because there were, before there was a problem, you know, I'm seeing some years on it. So we go in, and we're talking about that we would like them to collect socks. And we were meeting with the secretary. And Andrew says to him, what are all these crosses doing? I mean, what are they signifying? They put a cross up every year. Their intent is to put a cross up every year until Roe versus Wade is overturned. So we drove out of there and said, I bet they're not going to be collecting socks for us either. And no, we heard from them a couple days later. They had too many other things that they were doing in our church that they would not be able to collect any socks for us. So, politically, of course, I've been very disappointed in the Obama administration and all the deportations. And one of the things, though, I will have to say is I hear him say things, and then I would see things, people in Tucson continuing doing things that he said you shouldn't do. And I asked this attorney that works with No More Deaths at one of her talks, why is this happening? And she said, she thinks they just will not take orders from a black man. It gets down to that. Mm-hmm. That the Border Patrol there just ignores what he's trying to tell them. And they do what they want to do. And one of the things that we have found that's helpful is when the Border Patrol comes, because they do it a lot in the desert. They will stop people in there trying to put out water. Is videoing them, or videoing some of the things that they're doing, or recording them, and sending them to Washington and showing what they're doing, because they'll tell us, no, this isn't being done. And we can say, well, yes, here it is being done. Now, one of the things that drew me into No More Deaths, at the very first meeting I went to, was, and this was still, the federal prosecutor was still a Bush appointee. And he was prosecuting people for littering, for putting water out in the desert. And one of them that was just given community service work for doing this was the RE director of the church I was going to, who was studying to be a minister. His name was Walt Stanton. And he went back to the seminary and told him he had to do this community service, and they said, well, what do you have to do community service for? You didn't do anything wrong. That's admitting you've done something wrong. So he came back to the group, and the question was, should he do this or not? Because the judge told him, if you don't do it, you're going to prison. And I was just amazed. I go to some really boring meetings, I'll tell you. That I realized before I came to this one, when I'm trying to decide, and one vote, they vote on consensus. And as soon as you walk in, you're a member of the group, and if you go like this, you block the vote. It's just amazing. So we were trying to decide what to do, and I just looked at this frail, skinny little guy and was trying to picture him in a federal prison for littering. And so one of the, he did do the community service, deciding to do the community service. And there was a lot of people that, because we were getting a lot of attention, I thought, I mean, it's like, what can we do to let people know what's going on? I mean, sometimes, you know, I don't believe, I don't want to be arrested. I kind of let them know. I'm not interested in being arrested here. I don't want to have to be flying back to Tucson for hearings. And that's just not what I'm interested in anymore. Some people don't care. They see it as civil initiative. They're helping people. They're doing right. And you get arrested, you get arrested. But I'm one of these chickens, I guess, in charge to avoid being arrested. I don't see any usefulness for me sitting in a jail or prison. But a lot of people at that time were being arrested. 13 people went out in the desert. They let out a news release that they would be in the desert putting out water, and of course they were all arrested. And but one of the things that happened when Obama came in is he changed these federal prosecutors. And the federal prosecutor that came to Tucson said, quit bringing me these letters. So if you don't think a presidential election makes a difference, just in the federal prosecutors. And I will tell you that I really am worried that if we get some of these people who show so much hate for migrants and for helping people, people like that are working in the war desk are going to be considered terrorists. This work will probably have to be stopped. I just can't even imagine what life, it's bad enough now, but I can't imagine what life would be like. So here's a picture of a student who's going out and working in the desert. One of the things No More Desk does, and they've got more people than they can take, college students come on spring break and on winter break and on summer break, and they live in the desert for 3 weeks. They go out with No More Desk volunteers, and they holler. This is what No More Desk people do. They call out in Spanish, do you need water? Do you need medical care? Do you need help? I'm here to help you. And, you know, sometimes people will come forward and they'll find people, or sometimes they'll find a body. Another court case that was got to be pretty famous in that area, and even internationally, there was a lot of international support, was Joselina. I know that this church read Joselina for the book group. Joselina was bringing her little brother over. They were with a coyote, and both parents were in the United States. She was 13, she had her 7-year-old brother. And one of the things that happens is they run out of water and they drink this awful cow pie water and get E. coli and get sick. Anyway, Joselina got sick and she couldn't keep up. She was throwing up. So they left her behind. And the brother told people where she was, but he had it off, and they were looking in the wrong place. And border groups all over the Tucson area were looking for Joselina. There were Joselina buttons. People were still wearing them when I was there, even though she had already died. So Joselina died, and the No More Deaths person wasn't looking for Joselina. He was just out putting water in the cannon, and he found her body. And it, 2 days later, he got really, of course, emotional about this. So he was out 2 days later taking out water again, and he was arrested for littering. And if you helped anyone, like if you would take someone that you would find really sick and put them in your car and take them to a hospital, you would be arrested, and people have been, for aiding and abetting. So people are getting arrested for all sorts of things. So you are not to transport anybody. You have to call the Border Patrol to come and get the person. And what happens in the desert, they give them choices. Do you want us to call the Border Patrol when they're sick? They'll tell, we don't think you can continue. You can stay, now we have this nice tent. Two people, one in a ward, they got $6,000 and they bought that tent, so we just put it up this year. But we have a little smaller area before this. Do you want to continue walking or, do you want to rest and then continue walking? Do you want us to call the hospital? But then you probably will be deported because they will. Once they go to the hospital and retreat, they'll be deported. And many people are, at that point, just ready to go back and say, I'm not going to be able to make it. But some will rest, and even though we don't think they should go off on their own, they do, but it's their choice. And they're given little pills of chlorine to put in cow manure, water, after they run out of water. They fill it up with that and put this pill in to kill the bacteria, to drink it, because it is so hot out there, of course, and there's no water. That is one of the biggest issues. So young people are out there carrying maybe 8-10 bottles of gallon water walking these trails and putting it out. And then maybe after they leave, the Border Patrol will come and slash them with their knives and let them all out. And we do have on video people doing this. So a new person has been appointed over the Border Patrol. And he says, no, we don't do that. And we show him the pictures. And he's really trying to work to stop it. And I don't know if it's because it's an election year, but it does look like the Obama administration is stopping a lot of deportations, telling people, don't deport them unless they're criminals. You know, this executive order, I think, gives everybody 2 years just being able to register and being able to stay in the country. So there's a little array of light that's coming forth. I didn't see it for the first 3 years. All I saw was a lot of people being deported. There's a group in Tucson that volunteers that will help people that get deportation notices that Andrew and I tried to help with this while we were there. You meet with the family and help them fill out the papers, because maybe they'll say something like, well, I do garden work. And you try, and you, well, they probably do our garden, but it's their own business. So you help them write a letter that says, you know, I'm self-employed, make it look more professional, get letters from their churches. Try to, and if you're married, you know, your children there, it does help. But you have to be able to see an attorney and not sign that paper. And they know that some of these people will be eligible, the Border Patrol knows. Like the fellow I told you about that it came over when he was 3 or 4 months old. I think they knew that he probably would have been able to stay. But some of them are nice people and treat them well, but other people are just mean-spirited, and they just deport them without being able to talk to anyone. I've met an ex-nun over there who came and asked me if she knew I had socks. So she called me up and said, I could use some socks. I go on Fridays. So she came over. And through the conversation, she found out I was over there and worked as a nurse. She's not a nurse, but she tries to find a nurse to go with her. The medical clinics are all closed on Friday, so she goes for 7 years. She's gone over every Friday and tries to get medical care. She doesn't have very good understanding. She's not that great. And so she and I went down there. When I go back, I think she probably could be somebody that I'm working with. I've also worked with the Jesuits. The Jesuits have pretty much taken over giving medical care on that side of the border, and I checked out my nurse's registry, so I'm able to work with them. So, I mean, there's plenty of work to do. And then I do want to say, Andrew, who has trouble going over to Nogales, because you've got to walk about 2 miles. By the time the day's over, you walk to where you walk over. I park my car and walk over there. By the time I come back, I walk over 2 miles. He volunteers here at the Hispanic Center and gives free medical advice.
Legal advice
and helps people who are trying to, you know, stay out of jail. Because once you go to jail, you're in Madison. And he's very busy with that. So I think at this point, I'll open it up for questions. There's probably a lot of things that I've said that I'm scared. Yes.
And when you get to the border, I haven't been in that border, so I don't know. So, as an American citizen with goods and stuff, you can go right up to the border. No one stops you on the American side.
Well, they could. The people who check you,
you have to tell you. I'm talking about crossing in the
Yeah, I know. They can.
Right.
But if they stop me or ask me a question, I say, I've got medical supplies and I'm going to get humanitarian aid. Now, one of the things that also happened in collecting these socks, I didn't mention this and I was going to, a lot of these churches have church councils and there's people on it that want to make sure we don't do anything that isn't legal. And I say, I'm in Mexico. I'm breaking no U.S. laws. So I'm not doing anything over in the Mexico side that's aiding and abetting or doing anything that should affect the U.S. customs or laws.
Now, when you cross in Mexico, there's nobody checking you.
Oh, they just say hi. They may. I have the look that nobody bothers. I just guess I look like I'm not going to do anything wrong. Now, I walk over with other people who are young. They may have olive skin or darker skin or whatever. They can be stopped and they can be detained. Sometimes have to wait for them. No one ever bothers me going or coming back. So generally, I just say hi. And one day when I came back into the U.S. and I had to show my passport, I went with this Margaret, this nun, instead of Jim, the guy, and his buddy, Steve, the two guys I usually travel with. He says to me, where's your buddies today? I mean, they figure out who you are real fast. And they know what I'm doing there. And that's okay.
But are you saying that when you go over there, you don't have to show your passport to anyone on either side?
When I come back, I do.
No, but when you're going, you don't have to show to anybody. Are there Mexican authorities on the other side talking to some people, but they don't never ask you for a passport or anything?
I don't know if it's required to get into Mexico.
Well, I mean,
how do you bring your socks back?
Yeah.
Are they little bundles or what?
Oh, we just have our bags full. You're
not driving across with anything?
No, I'm not. No. Well, one guy does sometimes when we have a lot, he'll take his car over there. One of the main reasons why I don't drive over is you need to have insurance. And in Mexico, if you are picked up without insurance, you go right to jail. So I don't want to be in a Mexican jail. But a lot of people know where deaths will. They feel safe. We're not very far from the border. They feel safe going where the Commodore and where we give out clothes. They feel safe doing that. The medical clinic is about a mile away that they have set up now. So, it isn't a problem walking over there.
You didn't mention one of the cornerstones of the problem was during the Clinton administration when they changed the law. Prior to that, an immigration violation was civil. After that, it became criminal. And that's why the federal judges have all these cases. They go through 100 arraignments in an hour. Because now these cases, instead of being a civil forfeiture, they become either felonies or misdemeanors or people going to prison. And that was a big distinction when they did that. So I don't know if we'll ever get it back to a civil matter again, but once the law is passed, it's very tough to get it unpassed.
Mary, I understand that a large number of maybe majority of the people coming across the border, Wyoming, or coming across the border, Mexican border into the United States, are not Mexican citizens. They're citizens of Central American countries. So this must complicate things for people like you or activists.
In what way?
And I was wondering if this was, I shouldn't have said that. I'm just asking you if that's true in your experience.
Are all these people
that you're talking to, you talk with, are they all Mexican? Were they Mexican?
No. And where I said where we would give medical care that people check in, if they check, they have them walk over the border, but they'll check in, and if they find out they're from El Salvador or they're from Guatemala, they get a bus pass. And then they go back to, they can go back to their original country.
Okay, that raises the other question I was, I understand that the Mexicans themselves are deporting people who come to into Mexico from Central American countries.
I think they've just, I can't remember exactly what the, what they've just passed in their country, but it is something that's more friendly. But yes, if people are walking from El Salvador, they come on trains. I don't know if you've ever seen these movies about the trains. They're very popular. They come on trains or they walk. And going through Mexico can be just as dangerous and hard as once they get to the U.S. as far as Border Patrol and immigration attitudes, but I don't think they have the same problem dying dehydration. I mean, one of the things I think about is here in Madison, Wisconsin. What if all of a sudden, you know, over 100 people die in the forest outside Barrow? Wouldn't we do something? Oh, let's say they're Canadians. They're coming and they get to Barrow and they're dead. We find these bodies all over. Wouldn't somebody do something? Of course. There'd be an outrage anywhere. But I don't know if it's because they're dark skinned. It's like, oh, they just died. Nobody seems to, I mean, even the people, a lot of people in Tucson, I don't know if you just get to the point you think, well, what can I do? But I'm with a women's group down there who's very concerned about Palestine and the drones. And I mean, these are all good causes, but I've been to some of their meetings and they never even mention the border and what's happening right outside their city. That's what's absolutely mind-boggling.
Merritt, how does No More Deaths deal with what I would consider the causes of the problem, causes of immigration, like NAFTA, et cetera, et cetera? I think that's the root evil, so to speak, of all this. I was wondering.
Yeah, and this Doris Meissner, who testified before a congressional hearing and said they will come and die and they'll trickle down, she also testified that they knew when they passed NAFTA that more people would come. I would say that the people in No More Deaths are very active people outside the group and many different other groups. No More Deaths really tries to keep it on target so that their main job is that people will work together to stop the deaths. And I've seen other issues come up. One issue was trying to get the churches to suicide. Trying to get the churches not to invest their funds in companies that were doing harm on the Palestinian border. Saying, well, this is similar. We need to help the people in Palestine. Well, we have a lot of Jewish churches very active, and we're just against a lot of money. I mean, they try very hard to stay on their issue. And not to get involved in political, religious.
So you see, as individuals, folks in Nomor Des might take on the NAFTA issue in other organizations.
No, I like to be back to Tucson by November 2nd, All Souls Day, because the Day of the Dead parade down Tucson. And almost everybody that I know is in this parade in one organization or another. And it's kind of like in Madison, you see the same people and the same kind of issues. You have this event, oh, here's all my friends from No More Deaths, or my friends are welcome, or whatever. It's the same kind of thing. But No More Deaths as an organization really is not. I mean, when those ministers got together, they pretty much said, we have a real big problem here, which is this. We've got to stop all these red dots. And they have done a lot. I cannot tell, I mean, we have teachers who will volunteer with No More Deaths who have never been political in their life because they come to school and they tell a story. We were crossing through the desert. We thought we were going to die. And then we found a bottle of water. And we knew we were going to make it. And that is the story, simple story.
You know, it's a very, very widespread dots there. They're not all more or less in line between Tucson and the border. It makes me kind of wonder about exactly what's happening. But also, I'm wondering if there are other organizations, other churches, for example, who have similar programs.
Pardon me?
There are other churches who have similar programs, maybe in different cities, to your No More Deaths.
They're in Phoenix. No More Deaths is in several cities. And the Unitarian Church, nationally, this is their issue, and they support this.
And there's the Samaritans. That's another organization.
Yeah, but the UU Church, I think, is working with No More Deaths.
How about other denominations?
We have told you the No More Deaths is a faith base with many ministers involved. There are many different. I remember my first meeting when I said, oh my God, gosh, you know, they're going to put this person who's studying to be a minister in prison. And what I didn't realize is I was sitting in a room filled with ministers. One was John Pike, who was very active in the sanctuary movement, was sitting right next to me. And I had no idea that this was so faith-based, but it is.
Yeah,
these are ministers who have moved here. One of my good friends I got to know, they moved to live in Tucson just to do this.
Well, we have a friend who lives in Tucson who does United Christian.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you later.
Well, that's where another friend of mine is in the United Church of Christ.
What is shocking to me,
mm-hmm.
I was looking at the map. I've driven from Phoenix to Tucson south, and how far in we're talking about. I'm looking at that map, you know, you're talking, those people are dying 100 miles into this country. They're walking 100 miles through some of the worst terrain you could ever think of walking through at 110 degree temperatures.
Yeah.
It's amazing that they get that far.
Yeah, this year, as I said, it's hard for me to get into the desert. So I take opportunities that I can. And as soon as I arrived this year, they announced that they were having a memorial service out in this hill where three bodies had been recently found by No More Deaths volunteers. And it was a way to bring some kind of grieving process and to honor the people who have died. And in many cases, you know, the families can't go there, even if we can identify the body, like this Joselina had a mother and father in the United States. She couldn't go to her own daughter's funeral that was out in the desert. So I went, and I drove with someone, well, I always have the same experience. I didn't want to drive in this area. And so we get there, and they tell me I'm supposed to walk up this little hill and just follow the migrant path up it. And I'm looking, and I think, where is there a migrant path? I don't know why I thought a migrant path was going to be bigger, but it isn't. It's like just in between them. So I had to finally follow someone and try to keep up with them. And when I got up there, I was so thirsty. And then just looked at this vast area and thought, how does anybody walk here? It's just, that's why I think they thought, we'll leave this part of the border open. That's why it's really hard, if you look at it, to figure out how are you going to build a wall through mountains and canyons. I mean, that's being debated now. Let's finish the wall. I mean, that's sort of, let's finish the wall.
If there are no further questions, I think we owe Mary a round of applause.